fall harvest time in Wisconsin. So what's the update on corn prices and soybean prices and milk prices? And what's the update on the avian flu that hit Wisconsin's chickens and turkeys this summer? So I'm really glad to welcome back Secretary of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Ben Brentzel. Ben, thanks very much for coming back.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Let's talk about the harvest. Boy, that corn looks tall. I mean, are we seeing a record harvest?
Well, if it plays out in the soybean field as we anticipate, we will see a record harvest. If it plays out as we're estimating corn yields, it'll be the second largest harvest on record for the state of Wisconsin. Those are both state of Wisconsin situations. Looks really good. Harvest is going well. Of course, it's never done till it's in the bin.
Sure.
But the farmers are very, very happy with what I've heard so far on yields and the quality.
Well, has that production, has it driven down prices?
Oh, yes. The production nationally is expected to be pretty high as well.
And in both soybeans and corn?
Both. And if you go back 2 years ago, we were talking $7 corn and $19 beans. And both of those prices are things of history. We're talking mid $3 corn today, half of what it was. And we're talking half of what it was for soybean price-wise as well. So price in the marketplace is depressed, so we need those yields to make sure that they have at least the revenues available to pay off for the inputs that they put into their crop growing this year and for the plans for next year.
Well, if we get a record crop with those prices, are many of our farmers going to lose money on this year's crops?
Well, that's really hard to tell, but some of them will contract ahead and get a little better price. Those that try to use the cash market may find that their pocketbook is not going to be as full as it has been in the past. Those farmers that rented land at a very high cost and locked it in for three-year rental rates, it's going to be pretty hard for them to have a positive balance at the end of the year. There is one good piece of news in this whole thing. While we have a lot of dairy farms that do sell cash grain, at least those farms that purchase proteins like soybean meal or purchase corn for their grain feeds for their livestock, those costs are down, so it is not as hard on the livestock industry as it has been in the past for feed prices.
Okay, and what about milk prices? I think the last time we talked, they were pretty good.
Those
have also come down, right?
Yeah, they were really good. When we were talking last time, it was some of the best we'd ever seen for our dairy farmers, and those prices have fallen as well. We topped out at $24, $25, depending on who you talk to a couple of years ago for every 100 pounds of milk that was sold. Today, you're in the $16 to $17 range for many of our farmers. A few are over the $17. But that's a huge difference when you talk about for every 100 pounds of milk you're producing, that you are now being paid $17 instead of $24.
That's a big difference.
Huge.
Are we seeing then more and more of the small dairy farmers can't afford to do it, going into other things or taking second and third jobs or something?
Well, I saw that transition more several years back when it dealt with health insurance issues, and the cost of health insurance was such that they just had to go find that off-farm job in order to obtain health insurance they could afford. I have not seen farmers moving into the job market this time around. I think what happened was those farmers that are really serious about farming and want to make a go of it are putting all of their energy, all their expertise, and their focus on their dairy rather than going elsewhere.
While we're on that subject of health insurance, has the Affordable Care Act been a help to some farmers because their incomes have been so low, Ben?
Well, we're hearing stories from farmers that every one of them gets impacted differently. There were farmers that had in the past had pre-existing conditions and were finding it impossible to find insurance, and presently are finding insurance. Sometimes it's not economical for them, but they are out there searching for insurance policies and paying for those. Anytime you work in a high-risk occupation and the actuarial studies, those are the people that pencil out the numbers.
Yes. Life expectancy.
Say that this is somebody that's kind of risky for us to be insuring. We got to get more money out of them. That's challenging in the farm community.
Let's turn to a new subject. Let's turn to the avian flu. That, mm-hmm. I was surprised. We had several regions of Wisconsin that were hit really hard by that. Weren't, is that correct?
Yeah, we had down in the Jefferson County area, we had an outbreak of avian influenza. And then if you get up in the Chippewa County and Barron County, we had some outbreaks there. It's still being analyzed. The presumption is that it was migrating fowl, that ducks and geese that were coming through the area that are carriers. They are not impacted by it, but they are carriers. That maybe the proximity or where they were landing and staying for a while led to air plumes that infested some of these farms. Nobody yet has really said this was the cause. We have done a huge amount of analysis, and I would say the poultry industry themselves. I know Jennie-O Turkey has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in research and evaluation and doing a very extensive look at what could have caused it, what most probably did cause it, and what are the things they can do to try to avoid the impact coming in the future with migrating fowl coming back through.
What's the poultry industry worth to the state of Wisconsin?
Millions.
Hundreds of millions?
Not billions?
Or?
We have 9,825 dairy farms. We have over 19,000 people that have poultry.
19,000.
So in some of those, they're backyard flocks that provide the eggs for the family, and some of them is small flocks that the family markets a few eggs. And then in some cases, it's a huge business, and they provide millions of eggs for the general public. Some of it the public doesn't even see, because it comes out in a liquefied, pasteurized form, and it's used in the baking industry. It's used with all the ingredients. When you read a label on a product that may have a egg yolk or egg white or some portion of it in there, that has a huge, huge impact, and not just in this state, but nationally.
Have you seen figures of how many turkeys and chickens we lost in Wisconsin because of the flu?
Yeah, we lost about 700,000.
Is that a third of our
no
units?
Or? No, and actually, when you start talking about what we lost in the poultry industry nationally, it's below 10%. It's under 8% down in that category. But because of the size and volume of the industry, it's a pretty good challenge. And you take a company like Jennie-O Turkeys. Mm-hmm. That has facilities in Minnesota and here, and the challenge they faced, and then you take Golden Plump or Arcadia Chicken and the kind of the challenges they were facing, and then the egg-laying industry. All in all, for those individuals, for a grower that was producing poultry for any of those companies, that's a total loss. And the only way they get any kind of reimbursements is through an indemnity program. So explain the indemnity program. Anything that dies before the determination is made that that's what caused the death is not eligible for indemnification.
Is that a federal program?
That's a federal program. And so what you want to do is make sure that you evaluate quickly, get the determination, and do all the paperwork, and then start down the process. Because any animal or any poultry that's lost prior to a determination is not eligible for reimbursement. And the eligibility for reimbursement goes to the person that has ownership of that poultry item. So if you are a grower, you got to work with the big companies that you're working with to get some of that payment as support for the effort you put into it. And the other thing that's interesting is The value of the bird is determined by the age of the bird. So if turkey is selling for a particular price and your turkeys are only half grown, then that's what you're going to get paid for reimbursements, is the half-grown turkey, and you'll lose all of the revenues that you anticipated getting in a few weeks out.
Well, has Wisconsin lost some of its poultry producers because of the avian flu?
I'm not really sure that we have. I know there's a concern that maybe some would choose, because of their age, just to not to retrofit the buildings, and it's just time for me to exit the whole process of dealing with these kinds of issues. I will say that it's a challenge to make sure that we have our systems in place to be able to react as quickly as possible and do it in such a way that we create as much efficiencies as possible. So that's why the state of Wisconsin, DACCAP is the incident command. But we work with the National Guard, with Military Affairs, with the Department of Natural Resources, with Public Health, both at the state and local levels, as well as the federal government, to try to make sure that when we have to address these issues and we euthanize birds and then we have to take care of the carcasses, that it's all done in a manner of which it would be environmentally appropriate, that we have the equipment available to do it. Because when you start talking about houses that hold hundreds of thousands, if not a million birds, it's a real effort to get the kinds of equipment around that you might need.
Well, 1.7 million carcasses, just in Wisconsin, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read about the process, but I have questions. There is foam applied that suffocates the animals. And then what happens? Are they buried? They're not burned? What?
No. We use a methodology that we feel is the least painful to the animal, that happens the quickest, and it's foaming. And once the carcasses are dead, then they are composted, and there's a very specific methodology for composting. We do that inside the facilities, if at all possible, so that you don't move the contamination outside the facilities. If it is not possible and they have facilities that manage other kinds of waste issues on their farm or nutrient management issues on their farm, then we use those facilities. I know Iowa had some challenges with other issues, but we tried to compost on site within a controlled environment. We use the Department of Natural Resources. We spend a lot of time on the phone with Cornell University. That's very up to date on methodologies of composting. And then once the composting takes place, and it's a byproduct, and there is no fear of contamination by testing, we do testing, then that compost is delivered out onto the landscape. But it's all tested prior to that activity happening.
When your 2015-2017 agency budget got approved, you didn't know about the avian flu.
No.
So is this a fiscal burden on the agency? Are you going to have to ask for a supplemental appropriation?
Well, we've not asked for supplemental appropriations. While Minnesota and Iowa's departments have asked, we have chosen not to ask. We have evaluated where maybe some of our shortcomings were. We believe that one more person out in the field coordinating activities is a huge benefit. We also believe that we need to do a better job of communicating directly to those impacted farmers. Our general information and our general delivery of news was pretty well done, but we could have done a better job of communicating directly with the impacted farmers. And so we have asked the legislature, and it's under review, for two positions, one for coordinating field service activities, and the other one will be to directly inform those impacted producers as to what's going on, why it's happening that way, and what they can expect from us.
Just one final question on this subject. Have you seen any figures of what the avian flu cost the agency to deal with some of these to deal with 1.7 million carcasses. Have you seen any dollars?
Well, I know that we pulled almost everybody off their routine activities that they're engaged in, and we moved to an incident command post system, and we had pretty much our entire animal health division working 21 days straight, 12-hour days, until the USDA came in and gave us some relief. And it was an overwhelming challenge for those individuals.
You must have been very worried that it was going to worsen to other sections of Wisconsin and our poultry industry.
Well, the reason we worried about it is because we have quarantine zones. Those are prescribed by the federal law, and they are monitored by foreign governments. How well are you managing your cleanup? How are you keeping it in the quarantine zones? And what is your protocols? Because we have a company in the southern part of our state that sells a lot of product to other countries, and Canada in particular. And Canada wanted to know how we managed it. Did we do the job so that their international trade could still take place? We still have yet to hear from Japan and Russia. They have very stringent protocols with time frames. China shut us down about 4 years ago with an animal health issue in this country, and they have yet to open their doors to poultry products. And so every country is different. But what I can tell you is, because the way Wisconsin managed its response to avian influenza, we had companies that continued to sell product that would not have been able to sell product had we not gotten that under control.
Is this one producer in Wisconsin able to again sell to Canada?
Yes.
They are?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about some other issues. As you know, Mr. Secretary, ag gag laws are being debated in other states. Do you have a position on those? And we should explain. This is when someone goes into a farm and secretly tapes films and then makes them public. Well, other states, haven't they banned them? Iowa?
Yes, some states have approached this whole issue of people who falsify their identification for the purpose of coming in and taking a video of activities that might take place on a farm. Mm-hmm. We had a situation in this state, for instance, where an individual was employed by a farm, went on the farm, and videotaped and put it out on the news network. Unfortunately, the person that was doing the videotaping was the person the farm had hired for the purpose of educating the other workers and making sure that that did not happen. So obviously the person was not doing the job for which they were hired for, and that was to protect against animal abuse-related activities, and spent their time videotaping for a very different reason in their own. I don't know what the reason was in their own mind. They should have been protecting those animals. So there's been frustration on the part of agriculture that people are using this as a public venue to raise funds, mm-hmm. more so than to actually address the issues at hand.
Well, I'm not aware of anything pending in our capital, but do you think Wisconsin needs an ag gag law?
Well, we've not found the situation to be egregious in our state. I know people have thought, you know, we have all of these requirements that if you know something, you have to share it with somebody. If a teacher knows that they think a child's been abused, they must share it immediately.
Yes.
If a doctor...
Mandatory reporting.
Yes, and doctors are under the same guidance requirements. If somebody decides that something is going on so egregious that they think they need to videotape it, giving thought to giving it to the proper authorities and addressing the issue immediately might have some merit, but that's for the legislature to debate and decide.
You're well aware of this issue on the West Coast. I think it's California. Isn't there a potential referendum on mandatory labeling for genetically modified organisms, GMOs? Has that issue surfaced in Wisconsin?
Well, there's been a number of states that have addressed the issue. Vermont has passed legislation, but theirs says you can't implement the program to other states around you also, and that's around Vermont, also put into practice. And other states have talked about it. Hawaii had a referendum that failed. Oregon had a referendum and it failed.
I was thinking of Oregon.
So there were states that have had referendums of failure. It's interesting that everybody that wants to stop some kind of activity always believes they can do it through public information. And I agree that the public should be well informed. But I can tell you right now, the labels on food products are getting more and more and more complicated all the time about not only what is the ingredients in the product, but what is the nutritional value of the product, and then is it free of this or free of that, and all of these components. And I think people that want to use it as a marketing tool should use it. But I'm not sure that you need government mandating issues that others have a personal interest in the labeling process. I think it's accepted that when you buy something, you're very interested in nutritional value, but not all the time. When you see people buying candy bars, they aren't really too concerned about a candy bar's nutritional value.
Yes.
And they don't really read the labels. They just know that if I buy this chocolate bar, that's what I like. And then there are other products that are used as fillers, chips and others. Some of them make it part of the meal, but some of them are snack items. And a lot of times those kinds of grocery products are, it is not necessary to label for every idea that somebody has. And GMO falls in that area. GMO is a technology that's been around for a while. It's a technology that's used, and it's debated over and over again whether it's safe or not, and it depends on who you want to listen to. But in many cases, people are trying to curb the use or the consumption of those products while they're trying to make it confusing in the marketplace as a method of doing that.
So we don't need a GMO labeling law in Wisconsin.
I'm not sure it would benefit either the consumer or the producer to have a labeling law.
Let's talk about CAFOs. I'm so intrigued by, there's this proposal from the Iowa firm to open a rather large dairy operation in Bayfield County.
Hog.
Hog. Thanks mm-hmm. for the correction. And you have the issue of Kewaunee wells that have been polluted. Can you talk about this clash between people worried about pollution of groundwater and CAFOs? Are we seeing more and more CAFOs, which stands for?
CAFOs are confined animal feedlot operations.
Thank you.
And those are farms that have 1,000 animal units or greater. And people say, well, what's an animal unit? The best way to know is a full-grown mature beef cow is one. A full-grown dairy cow is 1.4 animal units. It takes more pigs to create an animal unit and much more chickens to create an animal unit. So in order to do an equal evaluation between the relationship of a poultry farm to a dairy farm, we use this animal unit category.
Yep.
There are more CAFOs as time goes by. Families used to all farm independently, and now oftentimes families are getting together and farming together, and it means larger operations for that family to do that. We have neighbors that used to farm separately and are now pooling the resources and farming with a larger operation. Our CAFOs are regulated far over and above any other type of farming that we have in this state. There are more regulations placed on them, both in the process of getting a CAFO permitted, as well as operational activities after a CAFO is permitted. There are three classifications of people. One is a group of people that's willing to say, I got a challenge here, and I know I have a challenge, and I have to fix it, and I have to work at it. That's pretty difficult, because as soon as you admit you have a challenge, somebody's there to help you, and they kind of make it larger than it might be.
Yeah.
There's another group of people that believe that there is a problem, and we got to get to the table, and we got to figure out how we can find a solution for that. There's a third group of people, and they are individuals who do not like large farms, And if you find solutions to the challenges of a larb farm, then you take away the problem and you allow the farm to exist. And there is a group of people out there that don't like large farms, so the best way is just don't create a solution, then they continue to have the farms and we can get rid of, or the problems, and we get rid of that size farm. Kewaunee has had well problems. Nobody is suggesting otherwise. Some of those wells are contaminated by human septic system error. Some are contaminated by
animal waste.
Application of animal waste. And there's somewhere in there's a truth that we have to get at. There are some solutions, and we're working hard to try to find those solutions. And nobody ever suggested that one way is the best way of farming. But when you have problems, you have to find solutions, and the University of Wisconsin's engaging in that after effort, as well as many others, including the agencies of DNR and DATCAP.
Does your agency have to take a position specifically on the hog proposal for Bayfield County?
No, we don't. That we have a livestock siting rule. And the livestock siting rule, what it says is the towns or counties that have adopted livestock siting means certain questions can be asked, certain pieces of information must be supplied by the farm, that there are certain approaches that have to be answered by the farm and can be asked by the local municipality to resolve the issue of whether a livestock siting should be there in existence or not. DNR, because of the size of this operation, actually is the ones that review all of the environmental impact statements and all the other kinds of activities that go around the permitting process dealing with the CAFO, the hog operation.
Well, when you have a dairy cow that counts as 1.4 unit, that cow generates how many gallons of waste in a day?
Oh, I should know that, but I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. A part of the agency's budget in 2015-17 is you're absorbing the food safety program, mm-hmm. which had been run by the Department of Health.
Yep.
Are we going to, and you're getting 21 FTE employees. Are we going to see any changes in that program? And explain the food safety program that your agency just inherited.
Yeah, there is a recognition that the business environment is changing. If you go into a grocery store nowadays, oftentimes you will see a restaurant in the grocery store.
Yes.
Now, we have always inspected grocery stores. And Health Services, Department of Health Services, has always inspected restaurants. So now when a grocery store changes its business focus from just groceries to a restaurant as well, now they're inspected by two different agencies. In some situations, restaurants used to be inspected by Health Services, and now they're thinking, you know, I really make a really great sauce. I know
yeah.
people would love it. So they want to package it. Well, as soon as you start talking packaging, which is processing or managing the delivery of product outside the premise, then that means we come in and start doing some inspections. So now all of a sudden our business structure is changing enough that it's requiring double the agency inspections that they've had in the past. And we have contract agents through municipal governments and county governments. So when they go in to inspect somewhere and they have a question, they call Health Services, who says, well, I know you used to get the answer from us, but now you got to call DATCAP. And
okay.
then in the conversation with us, it leads to more questions, and we say, oh, well, those questions, you got to go back to Health Services.
So it's a ping pong.
And it's been a ping pong for a couple of years, and there's a recognition if one agency manages the entire inspection process, they have one phone number to remember, one place to go, and you sort it out internally, and they don't have to get shuttled back and forth. And the businesses appreciate that as well.
Okay. I was reading something. I don't know. My question is this a big deal or not? The CWD problem on deer farms, is that a growing problem?
No, I wouldn't say it's a growing problem, but it's a recognized issue that we have in this state. And if you take a look at the wild population, every once in a while you get another positive in a different part of the state. There is the zones that are created. We have quarantines that we place on farms. We generally in a situation where a CWD is found on a facility, those facilities are not allowed to market those animals off the premise for 5 years. Any animal that dies or is harvested must be tested for CWD for a period of 5 years. And that's all animals, not just a part of them, all animals, before there's a determination made that it's no longer free.
I see.
We keep finding new evidence. The university is now suggesting that prions found in the soil may be, in fact, harvested and packaged in hay and may be moved by hay. So even though you don't have CWD in your deer or elk herd that's confined and locked up, by feeding the hays, we don't know if that might be creating an introduction point for prions. So there's still a lot to be learned there. We do our very best to make sure that we are alerting people appropriately when it's required and necessary to do so. And we're making sure we work with the community to know what they can do to protect themselves against CWD in their facilities.
Maybe one final question, Ben. Let me ask this. As you look out over Wisconsin Ag over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, what are the major issues that the agency is going to have to address, or what are your, quite frankly, major concerns as the secretary?
Well, as we consolidate government operations, we have to constantly look for efficiencies, but I will say with efficiencies, you have to maintain service. I can get really efficient if I don't serve the public. But our first requirement is serving the public, and then we do it as efficiently as possible. So that'll be an ongoing thing that you will see agencies having to deal with for a long period of time. When you talk about the agricultural landscape, we have a big challenge in transitioning our farms. Land's becoming very, very valuable. And for a young person to come in and lay down that kind of cash to get started in farming is very difficult. Just like small business, it's a high-risk enterprise when you first enter. And the banking industry is reticent or very uncomfortable about lending to beginning farmers. So we have to find ways that we can transition this farm from one generation to the next, and that's a huge issue that we have faced in the near history here. And because the farms are getting a little bit larger, they have to be a different methodology of doing that as well.
Okay.
Just Steve and Ben having a discussion, and I know you can afford it, my telling you what I want, you'd write a check out. But in a lot of these situations, those farms are big enough that sometimes that farm owner has to be willing to help that young person get started, if not giving them a break on the financial structure. Maybe they have to help fund it with the young person and be the banker, if you will. Then you have to talk to the older generation. What is it you want out of retirement? You can't just hand over all of your life's efforts to someone and find yourself without the resources to maintain a quality of life that you're accustomed to. And so transitioning of farms is a huge issue for our agency.
Give me the number once more. Ag is how big of a part of Wisconsin's economy? How many billions?
88 billion.
88 billion.
Billion.
Billion with a B. Ben Brancel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Thanks for stopping in for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.